Welcome to the Turning Pain into Power podcast. My name is Davina Faust, and I am a life transformation expert. My goal for this podcast is to bring you some positivity every single week and to inspire you to recognize that your struggles are just part of your story. I have completely changed my life, and I just want you to know that you can do the same thing. I'll also be bringing on some really incredible people who are just like you, who have learned to turn their own pain into power. Hey, my name's Davina, and I am a life transformation expert. So by now, I'm sure you know how beneficial it is to be meal prepping. You see on social media all the time how it saves money, it saves time, it keeps you on track with your health goals. But it also can be incredibly overwhelming. You know, you always hear about people spending hours in the kitchen and spending lots of money on organic food, and you're just kind of like, well, I don't have time for that. You know, I'm constantly working, or I have a family, I'm busy, I'm broke. Like, how do I make this work for me? And I was kind of in your position. When I first started on my weight loss journey, I lived with my parents. I was post-grad in a ton of student loan debt, and I didn't really have a Whole Foods or a specialty grocery store. All I had was Walmart, some farmers markets, and some local owned grocery stores. So I really had to be inventive. I really had to do my research, and I really had to figure out the simplest way for me to eat healthy on a tight budget with not much time because I was working so hard. And also, can I say, I am not a good cook. So I've created a system that works for me that uses not much time out of my day and only about $100 worth of groceries. But I've been consistently meal prepping for the past few years, and I've kept all 50 pounds off of my body, and I'm still kind of losing a little bit. So I have created Meal Prep Made Easy. This course is going to be a series of videos that will show you step by step what I use in the kitchen, how I prepare my breakfast, how I prepare my lunches and dinners, and even snacks, and just the little tricks that I use to make healthy food that doesn't taste like cardboard, that I don't have to be Emeril Lagasse to prepare, and that keeps me on track with everything that I want to accomplish physically and with my health. So if you're ready to take control of your health, if you're ready to set goals and smash them for good, if you're ready to find a simple, cost-effective way to be healthy, comment below and say, I'm in, because I would absolutely love to have you join my Meal Prep Made Easy course. Hey guys, welcome to the Turning Pain into Power podcast. I am so excited for this episode this week because this is just such a light that I am bringing to you all. This is someone I've known for so long. Always been such a positive source of energy in my life. Her name is Eliza Martin, and Eliza has worked in restaurants for over 10 years in New York City, Chicago, and currently in San Francisco. From working for the Rachel Ray Show to high-end catering companies, she grew her career to becoming an executive chef. However, Eliza also realized that she was moved by a mission to educate. So she now works as a cooking instructor for both children and adults. She is a speaker for colleges, high schools, and community centers, and she works to inspire young hands to get cooking again. Eliza, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
That's such a lovely introduction. Thank you.
Well, I stole it from your website. So.
It sounds so nice out loud.
Right? You did a great job writing it, love.
Oh, awesome.
So I just want to get into this because for those of you who don't know Eliza like I do, we met in acting school. And so we both were determined to be theater artists. And then she kind of took a huge turn to the left. But when I knew her, she was waking up so early, two or three times a week, hustling to New York City to be an intern on the Rachel Ray Show. So mm-hmm. Eliza, for anyone who's meeting you for the first time, I'd love for you to kind of start at the very beginning of what point did you decide to pivot to go all in on being a chef, and what has motivated you to continue on this path?
Yeah, I think a very funny thing happened when I was on my way to the forum, when I actually decided to venture to England to study Shakespeare. It was the very first time as an adult that I was cooking for myself. I had kind of survived on campus food, which you know very well too, Davina. It was just sort of a mess in college of trying to maintain any kind of health. And so it was the very first time I was kind of empowered with not only a kitchen, but like flatmates who knew how to cook. And I felt completely like in my element. And I lived next door to this beautiful market. And I found myself just sort of like stumbling there every weekend. And I'd start talking to the farmers or the stall people that were running all these different stands. And it just sort of became my like zen space to be able to go to the market all day and eat my weight's worth in cheese samples and jam and like wander back home with whatever gifts I had found and then create something. So when I came back to the States to finish my last year of college, it was something that just kind of felt like I needed to pursue a little bit more. When I decided to go to culinary school, it actually came out of sort of an acting class that I took where I got very angry and sort of shut the door because I was being told that I was doing well, but really didn't have the right look, really didn't like have, like I needed a personal stylist if I was going to go to my next audition.
Oh,
and I got so frustrated in the middle of that acting class. I remember just being like, honestly, f*** you, I'm out of this. Like, this isn't about art anymore to me. And I need to be creative and I need to be doing something that's actually worth my time. And at that time, like any good actress living in New York, I was bartending. And at the bar I was working at, they had started, probably illegally, letting me make their dessert menu just for funsies. Like I had just been like, you know, they knew I was really into cooking. And so they started letting me make whatever was on the dessert menu. Basically, I was making one dessert for the entire restaurant. And I was like, okay, this is kind of cool. I guess I better do it. I kind of didn't really look before I left. I sort of fell into the first culinary school I could find that would A, accept me, B, affordable, and C, like I could take classes on the weekends. And as soon as I started, it was, I mean, incredibly difficult, but definitely felt like I was on to something. I don't really think I had any idea what that something was. Honestly, I'm still figuring it out. But 10 years later, here I am with a lot of very funny food stories. And it's gotten me, I don't know, it's such a universal language. I can take it anywhere. And I've been able to move from state to state because of it. It's a really cool gift. I just find it to be my mission now to share it. It's not really something I think I can keep secret, you know?
Absolutely. I love that so much. And I guess my very first thought of hearing, you know, you live in New York City and it is so, no matter what your industry is, it is so competitive.
It is so frustrating. It was so funny to me that as soon as I left one industry, jumped into another and the story didn't change. It was so competitive. I had to see my first fucking sous chef over me hid all of my prep because she wanted me to be faster and she wanted to be stronger. And so she would like, I would work my butt off the day before to like make all of this food ready for the next day. And I'd come into the restaurant and I'd have 1 hour to set up because I would dash from the food magazine I was working at over to the restaurant and have like just enough time to like pee and then start my shift. And I would get there and my prep would be gone. So I'd have to like, in a matter of seconds, like put together whatever I was supposed to have so chef wouldn't yell at me. And like my sous chef was totally sabotaging me. So it was just sort of like, like it's I got like, out of one of those and I just jumped right into another one.
Yeah, it's like where Devil Wears Prada for like kitchen life. Crazy. So then how did you kind of, obviously you're driven by the passion to be creative and to work with food, but how did you silence those thoughts of like, maybe I'm not cut out for this. Maybe this is the imposter syndrome taking over type of mindset. Gosh. How did you push through those adversities?
Such a good question. There's a couple of answers. And I think when I was in the thick of it, I was really low. And kind of the catch 22 of working in kitchen worlds is that you have a lot of time to internalize. Like there's a lot of time where it's just you and your own mind. You're not really talking to the people around you. You're just sort of like focused on what you're doing. You put your head down and you push. During service, there is no time and you're just like, you know, whatever gets called out or barked at you, you do. And it's not until really the end of the night when you're like trying to decompress and like having a shift drink or like going home that I think those thoughts really start to get to you. And I spent a lot of sleepless nights just sort of like, I'm not cut out for this. And I don't know if I'm really able to do this. And I'm tired of being yelled at and I'm tired of, and my body is going to fall to pieces. It's so exhausted. The crazy thing was that even in the middle of all of this, like my transition into the cooking world was really fast. I started culinary school and about 3 months in, I got my first job working at a catering kitchen. I got really lucky and had an awesome mentor who was this lovely French chef named Michel, who like took me under his wing and sang opera and made truffles with me. like unbelievable. He was beautiful. And having these little like moments of light just kind of like kept me on course. But even, you know, with all of this stuff happening, I still would go home and cook. It was still kind of like this weird therapy I found. And so, and honestly, since, you know, I was in high school, it was the only way I really knew how to show care or affection for other people. Like my mom would always joke, like she knew I had a crush on somebody when I would get up at 5 a.m. and make cookies before I went into high school. Like totally true. So like, yeah. it was like the only way I could really express. So as I started to kind of uncover that and unlock that, it just sort of, I don't know, I think what helped me and what's always helped me and what will always continue to help me is that I'm not really afraid to say yes to things. I really think that if you throw out to the world what it is you want, and if you allow yourself to be open, the world just provides. And that sort of has seemingly worked out so far. It's been hard, but it definitely, you know, just saying yes has kind of helped me abate that fear of not being enough, that fear of like, I don't know what I'm doing. And I have to keep reminding myself that like, I got into this field because I will never, ever, 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 ever know it all. And that's kind of the point. Like, I love this industry because there's always learning to be done. There's always another culture of food that I haven't cooked. There's always like another element of science that I don't understand yet. There's always these like challenges that are going to come up. And yet it's still like this universal language where we're all kind of connected about it.
All of this is so beautiful. I'm just sitting here like covered in chills, like probably going to cry. Like this is just,
oh, not yet. Let's talk about kids first.
so great. And I was just even thinking, just like listening to you speak about this, like, you know, just saying yes to things. And I think of you, you've jumped from city to city to city with just such ease. And
a goddamn lunatic. I don't know if it was easy, but I just sort of was like, yeah, you know, I haven't checked that out. I don't have anything holding me here, so let's do it.
Yeah. So then like, at what point did you have just a moment where you felt like, you know, I talked about the imposter syndrome, but let's flip the script to the other side. What was like one of your most beautiful, amazing feelings of I've won?
Oh my gosh. I think there are a lot of moments from these same mentors that helped me feel like I was doing okay. And even if it was like a small moment in the middle of service when my chef would like taste the sauce I made and then do the thing where she would like be like, okay, who made this? And I'd have to like sheepishly me, and then she would compliment me. And then so like there would be these little tiny like moments of wins. And I don't think I saw my growth. You know, when you're in the middle of it, you don't see your growth. You only can really see your flaws. And maybe that's just me. I just like am really good at being my worst critic. So there would be these like little pivot points where either, you know, get a compliment from my chef, or larger moments when, you know, I would do these pivots and have really awesome opportunities come up. I moved from New York to Chicago because by the grace of God, somehow I managed to win a funny cooking competition through the James Beard Foundation. And that like offered me an opportunity to go to Chicago. And so like the world presents you with things that you're like, I could never say no to that. You shouldn't say no to that. So I think that that was just sort of what happened because, and still I'm pretty good at putting myself out there. If I see something and try to go for it, I'll put my whole heart into it. And usually that served me pretty well. So for this particular cooking competition, when I moved from New York to Chicago, we had to put together a menu. It was some sort of like crazy fusion menu of Indian and Latin cuisine, which I thought was crazy. But I, of course, was like, you know what? I'm going to go balls to the wall on this one. I'm going to make a cocktail. I'm going to make a first course, second course, third course, and make this like ridiculous. Like it was ridiculous. The portions were out of control. I was like such a novice, such a like dumbass. But I like made it with my whole heart. And like, that's what got me to the next thing. And I knew I didn't know everything. I got to this restaurant, Davina, in Chicago. I couldn't even pronounce the menu. Like, I don't know Indian food at this time. I'm like, skinny little white girl, like, yeah, okay, let's do Indian. Let's do it. So I had to learn. And that was like this, maybe that's where the imposter syndrome could come in, is that I didn't know anything. And that was at the same time, like the big fear and the big excitement, because it was like, cool, I get to sink my teeth into something new. And I think having to look at it that way, like changing it from like, here's what I don't know, but here's what I could learn, it kind of helped get me through that crazy year.
Yeah. And that's another thing that one of my mentors has always said to me is just say yes and figure it out later. Like if you get the opportunity, honestly, just say yes. And then Dr. Google, you know, he's there for you. But
the more I like meet about, you know, the people in this industry, really in the industry, nobody knows it all. Like I caught my chefs making stupid mistakes too. Like we're not gods. Like we're all trying to figure this out. And like, the more knowledge you can acquire, it's just, you just grow. I don't know.
Absolutely. Yeah. So after Chicago, you had moved to San Francisco and you were working as an executive chef. Were you presented the opportunity to start teaching, or was that something that just kind of came from your own heart?
Good question. So that was another pivot point where actually my old roommate from New York had moved back to San Francisco and asked me to join his team as the executive chef at his restaurant that his father owned. And that was one of those things where it's like, I had actually left restaurant world for a little while and was running my own catering company and my own aquaponic farming company in Chicago, and was part-time working for a children's culinary school. So I like had all of these things I was juggling in Chicago. This opportunity came up and it was one of those, you know, it was another one of those, I can't say no to this. I'm going to do this. So I came to San Francisco and started taking over this restaurant. And there were a lot of things to fix. It's still around. It's a beautiful place to have dinner. But I was kind of treated like this like prize pony a little bit. And I'd have to go out and talk to tables. And two funny things happened when that would go on. Like I would be annoyed that I'd have to go leave my team and walk out to the restaurant. But it was also kind of like, it was fun to be like, yes, thank you for trying my new dish. I hope you enjoyed it. I made that this morning. Like, you know, like getting to share my love for that food. When I would hit the table, it would be interesting, especially with like young people, how amazed they were that I could create pasta from scratch. And it just sort of like shook me up a little bit. I was like, if only you knew how simple this was. And we're giving you too much money for that. And it, like their amazement at this food, it was just sort of like startling for me, especially living in the Bay Area where it's like, we are in the heart and the hub of where produce comes from for our country. And like, we have all of these resources at our fingertips and don't have a f-ing clue how to use them. All of these technically advanced people live in the center of technological universe here, and people just don't remember how to use their hands. So it kind of like struck me, and it just felt like I needed to get back into the teaching because it's just stunning. It's terrifying what's happening with our generation and younger. So yeah, I don't know. It was a wake up call. I mean, the other thing that happened when I would go to these tables is that, especially if they were an older crowd, they would kind of see me approaching and do the thing where they're like, really? This is a chef? And I'm like, I know, crazy. White girl, young, swallowed. I got this job. It's so crazy. And those would be the moments where I'd have to fight those imposter syndrome, where it's just really,
yeah, I love your mission for going after just making children realize how easy it is to cook healthy food. And like, I am no chef by any means. So I actually created my own course called Meal Prep Made Easy, where it's like, if you, all you know is a microwave and like your little frying pan, I'll teach you how to prepare healthy food. So like, it's just, it's really, it's so like, I am not a chef at all, but somehow I figured out how to like make healthy foods enough that I can lose 50 pounds. So like, I think what you're doing is really important, especially for children, just to get them to realize like Brussels sprouts can be cool if you make them the right way, you know?
Yeah. And introducing them to different kinds of produce, or getting them to taste things for the first time. Like this week I was running a kids summer camp, getting kids to taste miso soup for the first time, or to make their own corn tortillas. Like the light bulbs going off, it's like the most rewarding just expression of care. And it's frustrating to me. I don't think there's really a place to point the blame, but along the lines and along the way, somehow we have devalued mealtime at home. And so there's got to be some sort of switch. And moms now don't know how to cook and pass that kind of gift on. Fathers now, it's the same story. Like that, we just have forgotten how to be in touch with our food. And I started to realize that if I don't, who will? Like if I don't share my knowledge, we're going to start dying sooner. Like we are evolving backwards right now. Statistically, the kids coming out of high school are not going to live longer than their parents' lives. Like our parents are going to die older than we will, which is crazy. We have all of this technology at our fingertips and we can't figure out how to feed ourselves. That's nuts.
Yeah. And it's also, it's so great for what you're doing for these kids because you're giving them a sense of purpose. Maybe that kid in class is so inspired by learning how to make his own tortillas that he wants to go home and show his family. So now it's
that's
like
the idea. Yeah.
He's contributing to his family. And he's also just saying, this is what I did. And it's such like a confidence empowering thing. So I love this. I love this so much.
Well, that's what food gave me. That's why it was sort of like when I learned to cook for the first time, like actual meals, not just like I'm trying to bake cookies in high school, like actual meals for myself where I was sustaining my own health. That was really empowering. And like, I had never really learned how to do that before. So like my mission isn't just to create the next Michelin star chef. I really actually don't want to do that. There's enough of them. I want to create like a generation of people who actually care about what they're putting in their bodies. Like if we're eating six times a day, probably we should know how to make that amount of food in some way.
Yeah. Well, this is a nice segue into what I was going to ask you is what are your future goals for either your education platform or are you going to launch your cooking show? Because I would watch it. I'm just saying.
That is the goal. That is the goal eventually. I have to get the right foot in the door in the right place, I think. But that is the goal someday. I think right now my focus is pretty heavily invested in a children's culinary school that I work for. And I'm just in the very beginning, Zavina, of trying to launch this speaking business. I really want to start tackling colleges are my target market, getting in, you know, when young adults are actually being formed into young adults and giving them the tools they need to actually survive, you know, rather than ridiculous chemistry classes, like maybe we should teach them for a few hours how to pick up a knife since they're going to have to feed themselves when they get out of school. And so that's my main push, is to try to get in front of college audiences. In the meantime, I'm doing these sort of like outreaches as practice rounds in places like YMCAs and younger groups of people, like high schools and middle schools, and obviously still need the education. So that's sort of where I'm floating right now.
But that's the important thing that you mentioned earlier is you're not afraid to put yourself out there. So even if it's a small group at a YMCA, you're doing it and that's putting you so much further ahead than from the person that's like, man, I wish I could do this. Like you are actually, you're getting that experience and you're making mistakes possibly, but you're learning from those mistakes and you're able to figure out what your niche is and how to position yourself. And I'm rooting for you. Okay. I'm rooting for you.
You're actually the best.
So one thing that I absolutely love to ask my guests just for my own inspiration or to further motivate others is what is your personal life motto?
I had a chef in culinary school who run around the kitchen. He was this enormous man, and he would constantly yell, like, "Keep it beautiful." that's sort of a voice that comes along with me. But he would always say, "You eat to live, so live to cook." And that was something that kind of like home for me, and felt like a mission that I needed to impart to other people. Like, this is something we do for sustenance, and we should make it a greater part of our existence.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Okay. So if anyone has just loved this conversation and they want to stalk you online, are you open to sharing your social media handles or your website link as well?
Yeah, my website's super brand new and in the midst of totally getting remade, but my speaking website is elizathechef.com, and my handle for my Instagram is exactly the same, elizathechef.
Elizathechef.
Yep.
I love it. Eliza, I love just speaking to you and just hearing your perspective on life and how you're just killing it. So thank you so
much. I really need this confidence boost. This is so sweet.
Well, thank you so much for coming on this show. I really wanted to hear your story, and I wanted to share it with my audience. So I'm awesome. greatly grateful. I don't even know if that's a word, but it is now. I'm greatly grateful that you came on the show today.
Absolutely. And if there's ever a time I can offer any kind of healthy recipe thing, you just please let me know.
Absolutely.
My goal for this podcast is to always spread some positive vibes. And to keep that good energy flowing, it would mean a lot to me if you could share this episode with your friends or leave a nice review on iTunes. Or you could always find me on Instagram at Davina Faust and take a screenshot of the episode. But remember, no matter what it looks like for you, your happiness is worth fighting for.